William Engdahl knows this to say about him. Soros speculates on the world's financial markets via his secret offshore company Quantum Fund NV, a private investment fund that handles a portfolio of $4 to $7 billion for several clients. The Quantum Fund is registered in the tax haven of the Netherlands Antilles in the Caribbean. In order to evade control of his financial activities by the U.S. administration, not a single U.S. citizen sits on the board of Quantum. Its directors are a curious mixture of Swiss and Italian financiers. Soros has been identified as a frontman of the Anglo-French Rothschild banking group. Understandably, neither he nor the Rothschilds want this important fact to be public, so the tight links to his friends in the London City, in the British Foreign Ministry, in the State of Israel, and to his mighty friends in the American establishment would stay concealed. Among the members of the board of the Quantum Fund is one Richard Katz. He is at the same time head of the Rothschilds Italia S.p.A. in Milan and is also on the board of the commercial bank N.M. Rothschild & Sons in London. Another member of the board is Nils than his selling price. From this fund, the Quantum Group evolved, a family of investment funds operating for the Dutch West Indies. Quantum is one of the most impressive investment machines in the world. In 8 of the last 24 years it made an official profit of over 50%, in 2 of those years even over 100%. In the meantime, Soros handed business over to a group of managers and limits himself to designing the great campaigns. He put down his principles in the book The Alchemy of Finance, where he says what financial speculators this is more important than real economic facts. But this is but the picture the media, and we know who owns them, paint of him. Who is he in reality? William Engdahl knows this to say about him: Soros speculates on the world's financial markets via his secret offshore company Quantum Fund NV, a private investment fund that handles a portfolio of $4 to $7 billion for several clients. The Quantum Fund is registered in the tax haven of the Netherlands Antilles in the Caribbean. In order to evade control of his financial activities by the U.S. administration, not a single U.S. citizen sits on the board of Quantum. Its directors are a curious mixture of Swiss and Italian financiers. Soros has been identified as a frontman of the Anglo-French Rothschild banking group. Understandably, neither he nor the Rothschilds want this important fact to be public, so the tight links to his friends in the London City, in the British Foreign Ministry, in the State of Israel, and to his mighty friends in the American establishment would stay concealed. Among the members of the board of the Quantum Fund is one Richard Katz. He is at the same time head of the Rothschilds Italia S.p.A. in Milan and is also on the board of the commercial bank N.M. Rothschild & Sons in London. Another member of the board is Nils O. Taub. He is a partner in the London investment group St. James Place Capital, which counts Lord Rothschild among its main partners. A frequent partner of Soros in several of his speculations, especially in the driving up of the gold quotation, is Sir James Goldsmith, a relative of the Rothschild dynasty. On the board of Quantum we also find the heads of some highly discreet Swiss private banks, who help the syndicated of organized crime, weapons and drugs, to launder their money. Then there is Edgar D. Depixiato, head of the Geneva private bank CBITDB Union Bancaire Privé, a main player on the gold and investment markets; Isidoro Albertini, head of the Milan stockbroking company Albertini & Co., beatnuts of the private bank Bankwerms at Geneva; Alberto Foglia, head of the Banca del Srisio at Lugano. In the course of the recent political corruption scandals in Italy, it was found that several Italian politicians kept their money at the Banca del Srisio. Apparently Soros had more than just insider knowledge about the weak points in Italian politics when he attacked the Lira in September 1994. William Engdahl explains, Soros' connection to the ultra-secret international finance circles of the Rothschilds is not just an ordinary or accidental banking connection. The extraordinary success Soros has on the high-risk financial markets cannot simply be explained with gambler's luck. Soros has access to information channels, both government and private. Ever since the Second World War, the Rothschild family tried to disseminate an aura of insignificance about themselves. But behind this, is one of the mightiest and the most obscure financial groups of the world. The Rothschilds spend a lot of money to cultivate a picture of a wealthy aristocratic family leading a quiet life where one loves French wines and another engages in charitable trusts. To experts on the CityN.m, Rothschild and Sons is most influential in the faction of the British Secret Service establishment closely linked with the neoliberal Thatcher wing of the Tory party. In the 80s, N.M. Rothschild and Sons made several billion US dollars from the privatization of 160 British state-owned industries they conducted for Mrs. Thatcher. The Rothschild Bank is also at the center of world gold trade. In this bank, the gold price is fixed twice a day by the five most influential gold trading banks. But N.M. Rothschild and Sons is also entangled in some very dirty Secret Service operations dealing with drugs versus arms. Because of its good relations to the highest places in the British Secret Services, the Rothschilds succeeded in preventing that their complicity with one of the worst illegal Secret Service networks, the BCCI, Bank of Credit and Commerce International, was never mentioned. In reality, the Rothschild Bank belonged to the inner circle of these international money laundering banks of the CIA and MI6 that financed in the 70s and 80s CIA projects like the Contras in Nicaragua. Also at the center of world gold trade, in this bank the gold price is fixed twice a day by the five most influential gold trading banks. But N.M. Rothschild and Sons is also entangled in some very dirty Secret Service operations dealing with drugs versus arms. Because of its good relations to the highest places in the British Secret Services, the Rothschilds succeeded in preventing that their complicity with one of the worst illegal Secret Service networks, the BCCI, Bank of Credit and Commerce International, was never mentioned. In reality, the Rothschild Bank belonged to the inner circle of these international money laundering banks of the CIA and MI6 that financed in the 70s and 80s CIA projects like the Contras in Nicaragua. H. Please, a brief interruption on the topic of BCCI and George Bush, Russell Herman, V.K. Durham, et al. One day Mr. George Bush needed a Herman signature on a document which would also include that of V.K. Durham. He called and reached V.K., who asked what the hell did he want? In the conversation the names got a bit worse, and finally the question was asked as to where Mr. Bush was at the time. He said he was sitting at his desk in my bank, BCCI. This was strange, since his being president it was hardly kosher to have a bank, etc. The signatures were not forthcoming, and that shortened Mr. Herman's lifespan by quite a bit. I will also note that we personally wrote to Mr. George Soros within the past 3 years when Mr. Soros was weeping and wailing about the damage having been done to Southeastern Asia through his antics, and thus and so. We offered to share with him in exchange for participating in bringing back stability to the area. Son of a gun, you know what? He declined. Just as has Mr. Bush, etc. Gee whiz, and they want to help so much, they say. At the present time, George W. Bush Jr. and Secretary of State, U.S. of course, Colin Powell addressed the Council of the Americas, the group of financiers and corporate elite behind the drive to expand NAFTA into a continental trading bloc. This is being well orchestrated by Bilderbergers such as David Rockefeller with the string pulling. My goodness, readers, there is so much to share and so little time, I think the saying goes. William Ingdell, was techie hint to Den Warung's creation is George Soros? What is behind the currency wars of George Soros? Earner study derivate, die financiell Wasserstoff bomb der 90er Jahre, derivatives, the financial hydrogen bomb of the 90s. H. Oh, by the way, The whole intent of this large American bloc, which will eat up everyone in reach, is to place everything under the dollar. You know, that dollar which had no value, no backing and no opposition. The influential chairman of the Banking Commission in the U.S. House of Representatives, Henry Gonzalez, chided the Bush and Reagan administrations for refusing to prosecute the BCCI. In addition, the Department of Justice repeatedly declined to cooperate in the congressional investigations into the BCCI scandal and the closely linked scandal of the Banca Nazionale del Lavoro, BNL. This bank had made billions of dollars from loans that Bush had granted the Iraqi government shortly before the Gulf War. Choke, and from where did Bush get the funds? Wow, could it be? Bonus 3,390-181? As a matter of fact, Bush and Saddam had at least one joint account with around $250 billion in its little account. When will you wake up, Chilas? Gonzalez said that the Bush administration had had a Department of Justice which he thought the most corrupt, most unbelievably corrupt Department of Justice that I have ever experienced during my 32 years in Congress. And, yes, indeed, we did try to get Mr. Gonzalez involved, but we suppose he chose to simply stay alive a bit longer. After the BCCI had been openly accused in the media for transgression of several laws, the New York prosecuting attorney Henry Mogenf announced official charges against the 161 BCCI. Mogenf accused the BCCI of the biggest banking fraud of the financial world. The BCCI during its 19-year history operated as a corrupt criminal organization. One of the directors of the BCCI, the Saudi Arabian Sheikh Khaledim, had been the head of the Saudi Secret Service during the time Bush headed the CIA. The BCCI during its 19-year history operated as a corrupt criminal organization. One of the directors of the BCCI, the Saudi Arabian Sheikh Khaledim, had been the head of the Saudi Secret Service during the time Bush headed the CIA. I don't want you to go away under the perspective that we somehow got no cooperation. We did. Our people found out how to deal with the big boys and even work out agreements, which we certainly followed to the letter of the instructions. Mostly in exchange for not naming the advisors. Among those contacts were some very high-level players who asked to not be identified. I don't mean just little boys, I mean players on an international level of the big loop. Not a single Western newspaper has so far uncovered the fact that the Rothschild group linked with George Soros was at the hub of the vast illegal network of the BCCI. The key person in these activities was Dr. Alfred Hartmann, the managing director of the Swiss branch of the BCCI, Banque de Commerce et de Placement SAR, head of the Zurich Rothschild Bank AG and the member of the board of N.M. Rothschild & Sons in London. He was also on the board of the Swiss branch of the Italian BNL and was vice chairman of the NY Inter Maritime Bank in Geneva. A friendly former Secret Service man who had worked on the Soros case disclosed that in September 1993 Soros had amassed, together with a mighty group of silent partners, a fortune in excess of $10 billion to use as a lever to unhinge the European currencies. Among the partners apparently were the little-known metal and oil dealer Mark Rich. Now where have we heard about Mr. Rich lately, attached to Mr. Billy Clinton possibly? And the Israeli ARMS dealer Shaul Eisenberg. For decades Eisenberg had been working for the Israeli Secret Service and has important arms deals in all of Asia and in the Near East. A third partner of Soros is Rafi Eaton, who before was the Mossad connection to the British Secret Service in London. Basically George Soros is another tool for economic and political warfare in the hands of the Rothschilds. He is among those circles who 3 years ago started a malicious fourth-right campaign against the reunited Germany. Soros is very anti-German. In his 1991 autobiography Underwriting Democracy, Soros warned of the danger that a reunited Germany could disturb the power balance in Europe. It is easy to see how the situation that existed between the wars could come up again. A reunited Germany becomes the strongest economic power and develops Eastern Europe as its habitat. A terrible witch's brew. His U.S. contacts put Soros very close to the financial and secret service circles around George Bush. His most important deposit bank and the main lender during attack on the European monetary system in September 1993 was Citicorp, America's largest bank. Soros called upon the international investors to unhinge the Deutsche Mark. When in late 1989 a reunification became probable, a high-ranking Citicorp manager said, "German unity will be catastrophic for our interests. We have to take action to ensure a decline of the Deutsche Mark by about 30% so that Germany will not be able to build up Eastern Germany to become the economic factor with a new Europe." According to his associates, Soros has an incredible ego. He described how during the war in occupied Hungary he could not have survived as Jew, so he had taken on a second identity. What he did not say, however, was that he let a man shield him from persecution who did wealthy Jews out of their possessions, and that Soros lent him a hand. This is how he survived the war. Leaving Budapest only 2 years after it had ended. Although he himself and the Jewish-owned media are quick in attacking all his opponents, especially in Eastern Europe, as anti-Semitic, his Jewishness is based on parts of the Talmud rather than on his links with Jewish religion or the Jewish people. 162. Outwardly, Soros supports a whole spate of social activities, like peace concerts with Joan Baez, stipends in Oxford for young Eastern Europeans, etc. But reality presents a different picture. Soros is personally responsible for the chaos the shock therapy caused in Eastern Europe after 1989. He foisted ludicrous draconian measures upon the weak governments there, which enabled him to buy up resources in wide parts of Eastern Europe and, at rock-bottom prices. Take Poland as an example. At the end of 1989, Soros organized a secret meeting between the communist regime of Rakowski with the leaders of the then illegal opposition union organization Solidarność. The plan he presented to both sides was as follows: the communists should let the opposition Solidarność take over the government to win the confidence of the people. Then the state should deliberately drive its own state industries and agricultural businesses to ruin by applying astronomical interest rates, by withholding the necessary state loans and by lumbering the companies with debt they could never repay. Then Soros would get his rich international business friends to come to Poland and buy up the now privatized state companies. The most recent example is the huge steel company Huta Warszawa, which today, so steel experts say, would cost about $3 to $4 billion to build if it was built by Western companies. A few months ago the Polish government agreed to take over the debts of Huta Warszawa and to sell the company now free of debt for $30 million to the Milan company Lucchini. H, that's the way it works, Chilas. To instigate his plan, Soros used a young friend, the Polish Jewish economic advisor Jeffrey Sachs, who however could not begin his advisory work in Poland because so far he could only show advisory work he did in Bolivia. So Soros set up another one of his many foundations, the Stefan Batory Foundation, which then in turn was the official client for the advisory work of Sachs in Poland, 1989-90. In Soros' own words, he has worked or still works with the main advisor of Lech Walesa, Bronisław Geremek, with General Jaruzelski, Professor Krzysiekowski, a secret advisor to the new Polish Minister for Finance and Economy Leszek Balcerowicz, and with the latter himself. Soros admits that he had known that his economic shock therapy in Poland would lead to severe unemployment, to the closing of factories and to social tensions. That is why he insisted that Solidarność take over the government. Through his foundation he could approach the most important opinion makers in the media, like Adam Myshnik, and his collaboration with the U.S. Embassy in Warsaw enabled him to censor the media which proceeded one-sidedly to support his shock therapy and opposed any criticism. What do you say now? Isn't that the old Talmud Illuminati strategy? Russia and the CIS states, Soros led a delegation to Russia, where he had been collaborating with Raisa Gorbachev since the 80s, to set up a further Soros foundation, the Cultural Initiative Foundation. This is a further vehicle for him and his Western cronies to enter the highest political echelons tax-free and proceed to buy the most important political and economic personalities of the country. After a failed attempt with Gorbachev 1988-1991, he changed over to the circles around Yeltsin. And again it was Soros who introduced his shock therapy, aided and abetted by his friend Jeffrey Sachs. From January 2, 1992 onwards, Sachs' shock therapy brought an unprecedented chaos and a foreseeable hyperinflation to Russia, which was followed by the best scientific research institutes fleeing to the West. Under the Soros plan, Igor Gajdar and the Yeltsin government shortened subsidies to industry and agriculture drastically, despite all of the economy being a state economy. The goal announced was a deficit-free budget within buys, stipends in Oxford for young Eastern Europeans, etc. But reality presents a different picture. Soros is personally responsible for the chaos the shock therapy caused in Eastern Europe after 1989. He foisted ludicrous draconian measures upon the weak governments there, which enabled him to buy up resources in wide parts of Eastern Europe and, at rock-bottom prices. Take Poland as an example. At the end of 1989, Soros organized a secret meeting between the communist regime of Rakowski with the leaders of the then illegal opposition union organization Solidarność. The plan he presented to both sides was as follows: the communists should let the opposition Solidarność take over the government to win the confidence of the people. Then the state should deliberately drive its own state industries and agricultural businesses to ruin by applying astronomical interest rates, by withholding the necessary state loans and by lumbering the companies with debt they could never repay. Then Soros would get his rich international business friends to come to Poland and buy up the now privatized state companies. The most recent example is the huge steel company Huta Warszawa, which today, so steel experts say, would cost about $3 to $4 billion to build if it was built by Western companies. A few months ago, the Polish government agreed to take over the debts of Huta Warszawa and to sell the company now free of debt for $30 million to the Milan company Lucchini. That's the way it works, Chilas. To instigate his plan, Soros used a young friend, the Polish Jewish economic advisor Jeffrey Sachs, who however could not begin his advisory work in Poland because so far he could only show advisory work he did in Bolivia. So Soros set up another one of his many foundations, the Stefan Batory Foundation, which then in turn was the official client for the advisory work of Sachs in Poland, 1989-90. In Soros' own words, he has worked or still works with the main advisor of Lech Walesa, Bronislaw Geremek, with General Jaruzelski, Professor Trzeciakowski, a secret advisor to the new Polish Minister for Finance and Economy Leszek Balcerowicz, and with the latter himself. Soros admits that he had known that his economic shock therapy in Poland would lead to severe unemployment, to the closing of factories and to social tensions. That is why he insisted that Solidarność take over the government. Through his foundation, he could approach the most important opinion makers in the media, like Adam Myshnik, and his collaboration with the US Embassy in Warsaw enabled him to censor the media which proceeded one-sidedly to support his shock therapy and opposed any criticism. What do you say now? Isn't that the old Talmud Illuminati strategy? Russia and the CIS states. Soros led a delegation to Russia, where he had been collaborating with Raisa Gorbachev since the 80s, to set up a further Soros foundation, the Cultural Initiative Foundation. This is a further vehicle for him and his Western cronies to enter the highest political echelons tax-free and proceed to buy the most important political and economic personalities of the country. after a failed attempt with Gorbachev 1988-1991 he changed over to the circles around Yeltsin. And again it was Soros who introduced his shock therapy aided and abetted by his friend Jeffrey Sachs. From January 2, 1992 onwards, Sachs' shock therapy brought an unprecedented chaos and a foreseeable hyperinflation to Russia, which was followed by the best scientific research institutes fleeing to the West. Under the Soros plan, Igor Gajdar and the Yeltsin government shortened subsidies to industry and agriculture drastically, despite all of the economy being a state economy. The goal announced was a deficit-free budget within 163 months. There were no more loans for industry, the companies accrued astronomical debts and the ruble inflation went out of control. Soros and his friends immediately profited from the situation. Mark Rich, the world's largest aluminum dealer, started to buy up a lot of Russian aluminum at incredibly low prices, with which in 1993 he proceeded to flood the market in the industrialized countries and thus caused the price for aluminum to plummet by 30%. This is just one example of the Soros exploitation. Debts and the ruble inflation went out of control. Soros and his friends immediately profited from the situation. Mark Rich, the world's largest aluminum dealer, started to buy up a lot of Russian aluminum at incredibly low prices, with which in 1993 he proceeded to flood the market in the industrialized countries and thus caused the price for aluminum to plummet by 30%. This is just one example of the Soros exploitation. H. How many of you still think Bill Clinton just accidentally pardoned poor old suffering Mark Rich? Hungary, when István Csurka, parliamentarian of the National Socialist Opposition, tried to protest the destruction of the Hungarian economy by the strategies of Soros and his friends, he was branded an anti-Semite and in June was excluded from the governing Democratic Forum. Yugoslavia, at the beginning of 1990, Soros, in cooperation with the IMF, in what was then still Yugoslavia, put down the gauntlet for what then escalated into a war. Soros is also a friend of then-Deputy Secretary of State Lawrence Eagleburger, the former ambassador to Belgrade and patron of Slobodan Milosevic. Eagleburger was formerly chairman of Kissinger Associates, on whose board Lord Carrington, Committee of 300, also sits. The latter's mediations have directly fueled the Serbian aggression against the Croats and the Bosnians. Today Soros has foundations in Bosnia, Croatia, Slovenia and a Yugoslav Soros Foundation in Belgrade, Serbia. In Croatia he uses funds from his foundation to hire influential journalists of to discredit opponents of his shock therapy as anti-Semites or neo-Nazis. From the Urna study derivatives you see how helpful it was for the jury to have introduced the term anti-Semitism. Chapter 57, L. Ron Hubbard and the Church of Scientology. Another personality with an interesting background is now deceased L. Ron Hubbard, the founder of the Scientology Church. Since this book here is dealing with background knowledge, perhaps we should look at the background of L. Ron Hubbard, whose organization is really victimized in public. In the early days of MKUltra, the consciousness control program in the U.S., the former naval officer Hubbard had researched the mechanism of human thinking, knowing about what secretly went on in the Navy. After refusing to comply with government research and to join the control psychiatrists, he published the book Dianetics, The Modern Science of Mental Health. The book proclaimed mental freedom and integrity as the birthright of humanity. The book made the bestseller lists and Hubbard's auditing techniques were described as very successful. Some of the processes that Hubbard offered to reach mental freedom were secretly used by the government to try and enslave the people. Other techniques described by Hubbard were indeed antidotes to the MKUltra methods of consciousness control. The US government then started a devilish slander campaign against Hubbard that was led by the Section for Mental Control at the CIA. The still young author had, probably inadvertently, revealed the key of one of the best-kept secrets of the Cold War. His office was broken into and a protocol was stolen that described the mind control techniques now known as psychotronics. Hubbard and his colleagues were physically attacked and only narrowly escaped a kidnap attempt. But the enormous influence by the Scientology churches shows that Hubbard was not just an innocent victim. And L. Ron surely knew a thing or two about some important events of this world, because he not only spent his 164 magician years in Aleister Crowley's Thelema Church in California, but he had also risen to the 33rd degree in the Scottish Rite Masonry, perhaps even to the Illuminati degrees. But let's get to the real stuff now.